the Pilots head coach by Terry Porter.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
but yeah.
I'd like to correct you. You're usually wrong, but I can't in this case.
I appreciate that.
All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline as we get our weekly view from the middle. He's keeping us up to date with what's happening in college football and more for USA Today online, usatoday.com. On Twitter at George Schroeder. George, a good day to you, sir. How are things?
Man, things are good. I got a little insight into how you treat your producer right there. Man, how mean was that?
you caught me at a bad moment. I was grumpy and I needed coffee this late in the day to keep me going. So, yeah. But you drew an accurate conclusion based on the information presented. I'll give you that. You posted a couple of interesting things on Twitter, and while not something that would normally resonate beyond the locals, Northern Arizona hired a guy by the name of Mike Marlowe to lead their athletics program. I didn't recognize the name, but upon reading, he's got some pretty familiar connections, not only here, but with the job he's leaving.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mike Marlowe was at Washington State as the senior associate AD to Bill Moose, and then has served as the interim AD since Moose went to Nebraska. But before that, he was at Oregon, both under Moose and Pat Kilkenny and Mike Velotti and I guess probably Rob Mullins too. I think that would be right.
Right.
So he went to Washington State in 2010, and so. But Mike Marlowe, very familiar to those who have, had workings with sort of the inner portion of the Oregon Athletic Department, and he's well liked in Eugene too. And so, congratulations to him for getting the Northern Arizona job. But what it also means is Mike would have liked to have gotten the Washington State job, and so it's clear. Obviously, you realize you're not going to get that job if you then, you know, that's the only reason you go take the Northern Arizona job.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I was not familiar with the name, but have been filled in. Oh, I want to talk about the Heisman Trophy. I know I always date myself. The first time I remember watching the ceremony, a guy by the name of OJ got it. I was at the presentation in New York for Mariota, and I'll tell you the truth, I've kind of become bored with it. The show is not really scintillating. It's almost never a surprise. You know, they've got 900 voters. I saw you were talking with some of your colleagues about it. Is there a need for a change in the voting or something to add a little pizzazz?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, one of my colleagues, Dan Wolken, who's also at USA Today,
right,
suggested and is adamant about the idea that they should wait until after the postseason is finished to, you know, include that in the voting. And my point on that is, it's supposed to be, or it always has been, a regular season award. If you think you want to include the postseason and just say, okay, then it's going to be the totality of the season, including the postseason, I guess you can do that. But I think what inevitably would happen is it's already a quarterback-driven, best player on one of the best four teams type of an award. You know, I know Lamar Jackson won it a year ago and Louisville didn't make the playoff, but inevitably it's somebody who's in the playoff conversation. And I think what you would see happening is it would get tilted so much into a what have you done for me lately thing that it would almost become a postseason MVP thing. And I think I actually think it would diminish the award in another way. I don't know how to prevent the Heisman from being diminished in a world where we're all focused on the playoff.
Right.
I don't know that there's a way to do that. I don't think changing it to vote after the season, after the postseason even is over, changes that either, though. I think it would cause a whole new set of issues for it. What we really need is what we really needed this year was an actual race.
Yeah.
And we just didn't have one.
Right.
Maybe we should have had one. Maybe people need to consider guys like Bryce Love more than they do. But there just wasn't one. It was pretty clear probably after the first weekend in November when Baker Mayfield, scored all those points, threw all those touchdowns, whatever, against Oklahoma State in Bedlam. And then certainly the next week when they beat TCU for the first of the two times, and he was good that time, that you knew he was going to win it. And that was partly how good he had been all season, but it was also partly because some of the other guys kind of fell off. No. That's what we need, maybe it's just a race.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like the idea. It's a regular season. It's like in the NBA and MLB, it's a regular season award. As we continue talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, on the opposite end of the boring spectrum, the Army-Navy game. You know, it's the standalone game, the Saturday after everything's been decided, bowls, conference titles. I mean, if you want patriotism and real student athletes, bingo. It seems, I don't know why in recent years, it seems to have this mass appeal. How unique do you find, you know, the annual cadet midshipman battle?
Well, I think it's always been really cool, but over the last few years, when it's kind of had its own spot on the college football calendar, you know, a week after everybody has finished playing, a week after the conference title games. And in fact, by the way, I don't know if you knew this or not. You probably did. But there had, because it's a week later, and because both of those schools are potentially, frankly, playoff entrants, but certainly could at some point impact the Group of Five's entrant for the New Year's Six Bowls, they've actually had to put a clause into the college football playoff protocol where if either of them actually is in the race to sort of be the Group of Five's entrant, or is in, you know, as the best champion, or if either Army or Navy is maybe in the mix for the playoff, they have to wait a week. They don't have to wait a week for everything, but they have to wait a week for that, at least for the New Year's Six matchup that, the Group of Five champion gets in.
Yeah, that's
and
amazing.
So it's kind of interesting that way, but I'm sorry, that's not a question you asked. I think its spot on the calendar has re-solidified its appeal to us because it's not buried in a bunch of other games, frankly, with playoff emphasis, and we get to watch football that it, college football that's probably in terms of it's probably as close to purity as you get in college football these days. In reality, we always like to think that, you know, the teams are pure and there's no corruption or recruiting violations or whatever. These guys are, you know, it's clearly not like that, and these guys are really student athletes and they're taking crazy serious loads, and they're going to become engineers, and they're going to pilot planes, and they're going to go do tours of duty, you know, as officers in the Army, Navy, and Marines. And I just think there's something to that too.
Yeah,
it's encouraging and uplifting to everybody who's a college football fan.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, one of the great lines by one of the announcers, it might have been one of the sideline reporters, saying, you know, you got to send your best thoughts these guys' way because their next road trip could be a dangerous one. I just always thought that was really clever. When we chatted last week, you know, we knew Willie Taggart was gone for Florida State, and we didn't know where the search for a new Duck coach would lead us. You co-wrote the article for USA Today with Dan Wolkin. What did you learn about that process, maybe who else was in the mix, and why Rob Mullins felt comfortable settling on Mario Cristobal?
Well, I mean, listen, I haven't spoken with Rob, so I've heard, you know, what he told reporters there. But, you know, look, they interviewed Kevin Sumlin. We've seen that. That's been reported. I know that. They talked with some other guys. Justin Wilcox would have been interested, but was this, and this is just a smart move, was a little bit leery about having only been at Cal for a year, and B, you're not going to go interview unless you think you're going to get the job if you're in that situation. And so it was one of those deals where it's much better for Justin not to take the interview than it would be to get the interview and hope you win the job if you didn't think you're going to get the job. That just gives you unnecessary problems back in Berkeley.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't really know why Rob Mullins decided, hey, we don't want to do Kevin Sumlin. It's pretty clear that Mario Cristobal had impressed Rob over the course of the roughly a year he'd been in and around Eugene, working on Willie Taggart's staff. Obviously, the players rallied for Mario. I don't know that that was a deciding factor. Let me put it this way. I hope it was not a deciding factor. No offense to the players. But when you're an athletic director, you need to take a much longer-term view of making a coaching hire than what the current players think of an assistant coach. It's not to say you don't take it into account. It's just that that can't be your deciding factor. Because among other things, those guys, as smart a young men as they are, don't have the first clue about what's going on outside the locker room,
right,
and who the other options are. It's just, you know, just right there alone. And then the other piece of it is, I think obviously they had seen some recruiting momentum, and they were hoping to keep the recruiting class that Oregon had cobbled together, and we'll see how that goes. But I think the early signing date maybe has put some urgency, not just in this coaching search, but others too. And so you put those factors together, then you add the fact that Mario did a great job. Never mind the record. It's 27-47. I get that. But did a great job at Florida International. When he started there, they basically had nothing. And he almost literally, and I know what literally means, he didn't like take bricks and build a locker room, but he built a program and really did a tremendous job and lost his job after they had a losing season. But there was some political infighting there with the athletic director. And the athletic director, by the way, got universally panned for the firing.
Yeah, Pete Garcia.
Right. And, you know, all he's done since then was go beyond Nick Saban's staff and do a nice job there and you know, further sort of enhance his reputation as a recruiter. And that's not to say he's not a good coach either. But so I get it why he would make some sense as a stability hire, given all the different kind of, you know, the factors, including the timing. And I do think timing and the early signing date, not even specific to this particular class that Oregon hopes to sign next week, but I think it has changed the game on the coaching carousel, especially if you have to get on the carousel late, which is what happened because of how late the Florida State hire happened. And so the only thing I would say about this is it's still a little bit odd to think that Oregon, you know, promoted Mario Cristobal, when I think they probably thought, if you'd have told them you were going to lose your coach, they probably would have thought, hey, we can go out and hire one of a number of guys.
No,
so,
I
think there's still some sort of, we'll just have to wait and see what happens, but it's a little bit of a weird hire from that standpoint. Doesn't mean it won't be a tremendous hire.
Right.
It just means it's maybe not what you would have thought the Ducks would have or could have tried to do.
No, it's been interesting from my chair to hear the reaction here in the bubble and then talk to guys like you who know what happens here, yet you've got the national view, and we talked with a guy from the Miami Herald. There are a lot of schools of thoughts here. Couple of final thoughts for George Schroeder. The most recent piece on the site has to do with this incredible coaching carousel. Interesting couple of weeks. I like you handing out grades like Professor George. So, you know, you graded an A here in the Pac-12. Why do you think of all the moves Chip Kelly to Westwood rates so high?
Listen, first of all, the disclaimer is the no doubt slam dunk rock star can crater and be a terrible hire. And the guy who was your fifth choice can end up being a tremendous coach who takes you to championships. I don't know, for example, what choice Pete Carroll was back in the day with USC, but
sure,
he turned out to be a tremendous choice. Remember, he wasn't their first choice. But Chip Kelly is that no-doubt slam dunk rock star choice. He was easily the hottest and most attractive available candidate in the cycle. And UCLA went out and was decisive and, fired Jim Mora early and went directly after Chip Kelly and made a really hard play for him and got him. And I think it's a good fit for him. I think he'll do very, very well in back in the Pac-12. You know, it's going to be much easier to recruit at UCLA potentially than it was at Oregon, frankly, because you can have 10 or 12 guys just show up to practice who just drove over from their high school every single day, who are like in everybody's recruiting top 100 rankings. And so, you know, these unofficial visits can happen all the time. I mean, just from that standpoint alone. And I just thought UCLA came up with exactly the right hire. A lot of times you say, hey, we'd like to go get Chip Kelly or whoever that guy is, and you can't really get him. In fact, Florida, which I also ranked as an A hire for Dan Mullen, went hard after Chip Kelly, too. That was their first choice.
Hmm.
And I think they had the top available job, Florida. And they didn't get it. It's hard to hire the guy you want. And so, to me, UCLA getting the guy that they wanted and the only guy they went after And it's Chip Kelly made that a no doubt the best hire, at least from here. They're all undefeated right now, right?
Yeah, that's good. All right, he's George Schroeder. On the web, you could catch his work for USA Today at usatoday.com. Keep up on Twitter at George Schroeder. George, always appreciate the time and, in this case, the flexibility. And I look forward to catching up next week.
Hey, thank you guys for being flexible.
All right, have a good one, George.